Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have Phil Cousineau. Phil is the author of The Wisdom of the Odyssey and over 40 other books, including the best-selling The Art of Pilgrimage and The Hero's Journey, Joseph Campbell on His Life and Work. Cousineau is a writer, teacher, filmmaker, storyteller, and cultural historian who has consulted on mythology and story for major studios including Warner Brothers, Pixar, and Lucasfilm, and has led mythology travel programs to Greece for more than three decades. Cousineau has been featured on NPR, CNN International, the BBC, the Smithsonian and Discovery Channels, and was the host of PBS and Link TV's Global Spirit. Hey, Phil.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Phil. Wow.
Okay.
Oh, Phil, thank you. Well, thank you for writing this wonderful book, Wisdom of the Odyssey. Absolutely amazing. And just,
thank you.
Yes. And just please tell us about your book, Wisdom of the Odyssey, and what inspired you to write it, because it's a fascinating tale. Mm-hmm.
Well, first, we have to go back to the roots, which is the beginning of all stories, right? And for me, I grew up in Detroit, Motown, the car capital of the world in the 1950s. And we must have been one of the last families in America to read books out loud together as a family.
Wow.
I know that's astonishing nowadays because it's hard to get kids away from their phones and parents away from all their responsibilities. But my father worked at Ford Motor Company and yet had a kind of private intellectual life. And he was insistent that we would read books and then travel. So we actually read the YA, the youth adult version of the Odyssey when I was a kid. And then we would go from Detroit to New York or Boston or Philadelphia if there was an exhibition about Greek history. So this really got into my corpuscles, into my chemistry as a kid. And when I left Detroit, excuse me, with a degree in journalism, wanting to be a writer, I first went to London, as a matter of fact, and then just kept traveling and traveling and ended up in Greece and felt like it was recognizable. It was my second home.
Wow.
And I've since discovered that there's a wonderful French phrase to describe this. Everybody knows déjà vu, of this haunting feeling that we have seen something before. But déjà lu, L-U, means you are in a place that you have read about before. And that's a thrilling feeling. If you've read travel literature, poetry, art, or seen a movie, and suddenly you're in that place. That's what happened to me when I first went to Greece. And for the last few decades, then I've been leading tours, both to King Arthur's England, by the way.
Wow.
To Paris, to Ireland, but mostly to Greece, walking in the footsteps of Odysseus. Why? Not just as a stuffy academic exercise, but because I was raised to believe and have increasingly believed it's everybody's story. How is that possible? Why? Because in a nutshell, a great Greek phrase, by the way, it's a story of homecoming. Our hero Odysseus has been away at war, as the whole world knows by now, at the Trojan War. And now he wants to go home to his wife Penelope, to his son Telemachus. He wants to go back to an island like you in England, an island he loves, Ithaca. But he is tormented by war, tormented by the savagery of warfare. And there is no straight line, beeline home after someone has been fighting in battle. Why? I'm arguing in my book that there is a great deal of wisdom, specifically healing wisdom, in this book. And in that way, it's everybody's story. Why? Because everybody on some level, all around the world for the last 3,000 years, has been trying to get home,
yes,
either a physical home, if you're an exile or an immigrant, or maybe you're moving and you're looking for a second home, a spiritual home, and it's very hard to get back there. If you are, I don't think he's lost. It's not like a bad New Yorker cartoon or an English newspaper cartoon in the Sun about the great lost navigator. No, he's not lost. He's a lost soul. Which is why it's a deeply spiritual story.
Yes.
Here is someone who has lost his soul, like many of us have.
Yes.
One way or the other. If we are betrayed or we betray someone else, we are lost and we need to heal if we are to get home again. That's why this story, I think, appeals to people the world over and has been revived again. Because on some level, who isn't trying to get home again? To their authentic, deep self.
And that is like, that's like The Alchemist, yeah? When he goes on the journey, you know, Paul Coelho, he wrote The Alchemist, and he was looking, what was he looking for? He was looking for the within, the divinity within. You know, he went to so many places and, you know, looked at so many places, but it was always within. And that's the hero's journey, is it not?
Well, you know, I'm involved in that. I wrote The Hero's Journey, The Life and Work of Joseph Campbell, the movie and the book. And coincidentally, my wife, who was my first publicist, by the way, on that book, we are still together after 30 plus years. And she was also Paulo Coelho's publicist for The Alchemist. So when I was traveling in South America, I was able to visit him because my wife knew him, and we spent a whole evening together in Rio. And it's because I had used a phrase in another one of my books, The Soul of the World. It's an ancient idea that there's an anima mundi, a soul of the world, or a genius loci. Everywhere we go, South America, North America, Asia, Africa, you go to the country, you go to a city, you're on a quest, you're on the hero's journey, or you're on pilgrimage. What are you looking for? You're not looking for what's trendy.
No.
You're not looking to be hip or cool. If you are a real questing soul, if you're on a spiritual journey, you're looking for the soul of the place. And so Paulo Coelho and I, we had this long, long night of drinking Glenlivet in honor of my mentor, Joseph Campbell.
Yes.
Comparing notes, because he told me, and this is actually very germane to our Odyssey talk this morning, because Paulo told me he was first a quite renowned a songwriter, a composer. He had many top 10 hits in Brazil, but he had lost his way. Sound familiar? Like Odysseus, Penelope, everybody loses their way one way or the other. How do you get home again? Paulo told me that he was so lost, he needed a new way. He had lost his soul, despite all the money, all the fame. This is hero's journey material, right? You're at the crossroad of life. What do you do? So he walked the Camino, the long walk from Paris to Santiago de Compostela, and halfway down the path in Spain, like Odysseus, wandering, trying to get back to Ithaca. Paulo told me that he was all alone on this long stretch of road, and he came across this cave off to the side, and there was a man in a long black robe holding a staff, like a Merlin in the King Arthur legends, with a crystal on top of the staff. And he just did this. He beckoned Paulo like this with a finger into the cave. And Paulo followed him because he was at a crossroad. This is Odysseus material. This is spiritual journey material, hero's journey, pilgrimage. And Paulo went in realizing at that point he needed spiritual counseling, guidance, some instruction from above, another dimension, you might say. And he went in and he reoriented himself, which is a great word for the spiritual journey. In this sense, it's a way to think about what Homer is doing with the Odyssey. If your readers remember, the Iliad is about the torment of war. It's one of the great, really anti-war books of all time. It is still being used in war academies, but also peace academies all around the world after 3,000 years. But the Odyssey is about the repercussions, the consequences of war physically, but also, and this is right in your territory, it's also about spiritual war. It's about being in battle with yourself, your inner demons, your inner insecurities. How do you heal from that? Well, one key for me is looking to the, remember the Italian equivalent of Odysseus is Ulysses. And many people use the names interchangeably. In Latin or Old Italian, Ulysses means healed wound or the scar, the healed scar. What that means to me, and this is what I'm writing in my book about the wisdom of the Odyssey, is that people who are tormented by any kind of war, it could be a marriage, it could be your war, your battle at work, maybe you're in the completely wrong line of work. How do you get out of that? How do you heal? Homer is telling us that his hero, Odysseus, has to go into the underworld, which is a figurative way of saying, hey, you might have to go into therapy.
Yeah.
You might have to take a pilgrimage. You might have to take some classes, which allows you to confront your own darkness. So in some ways, what I'm saying in the wisdom of the Odyssey is the way to get home again in the wise way, in the wise way, not the cool trip. Anyway, you have to confront your shadow if you are ever to get home again.
That's right. And that's like, you know, all of us go through the dark night of the soul at one point. I believe that we do it individually, but I believe the whole world is like going through a sort of collective dark night of the soul at this time of this awakening. It's like fastening up. But, and from, you know, the spiritual meaning of the journey of the human soul from confusion, from the ego and the hardship back to the state of unity, divinity, and the wisdom within, isn't it? It's like back to that, back to our true self, know thyself, back to the true self, because we are human and we are divine in this world of duality that we live in, aren't we? And we all have to experience that dark night of the soul.
Beautifully, beautifully put. I think that Homer in this book is actually kind of it's the transition between the ancient world of mythology, which says it's all about the gods and leave it up. That's fate. The ancients would have said it's the gods or God later is responsible. Today, people might say it's in my DNA. This is how I was born. It's in my chromosomes. It's my grandfather's fault. Right. Yeah. And this book is a way of working that out because Odysseus, his name means trouble in Greek. He was born in trouble and he makes trouble everywhere he goes. And he's the first thinker. Mm. One of your great writers in London, Edith Hall, says he's the first conscious person in Western literature.
Wow.
Why? That's an enormous statement. It's because he doesn't rely completely on the divine. The divine is out there. The gods are all around us. But he begins to think, he says, I have to make this decision for myself. And I will honor Athena, especially Athena. She is the goddess who is looking over him. And what is she the goddess of? Wisdom. So Homer, and this is such a beautiful ratio. It's saying human beings, we have to take responsibility for ourselves, but we have to stop blaming God or the gods for our follies. A great word we should bring back.
Yeah.
Because it's just easy to say, well, the devil made me do it.
Yeah. Right?
No. Like the old comedy. Or God wanted me to do this. And it's all, no. Odysseus is taking divine wisdom, as he such beautifully alluded to a minute ago. He's constantly aware that Athena is looking over his shoulder. And she is actually personified. I hope your listeners love this. Our word mentor. We love our word mentor, right? But it's a different system than, let's say, the Indian or the Oriental view of the guru. Mm-hmm. The guru says, I come from a 9,000-year-old tradition. Trust me. This is the way to think, to pray, to do your rituals and ceremonies, the Western way that you were raised in, that I was raised in, begins with Homer. And when Odysseus goes off to war, he leaves his son, who's just been born, he's an infant, with his family counselor, almost like a family therapist, whose name is Mentor. That's the first reference we have. In the Greek, it means mind maker. This is so startling to me. What it means is you've got a teacher for information. You might have a really great professor at university, but the mentor is the one, I dig this, I love this. The mentor is the one who helps you make up your own mind.
Yes, that's so true. Because at the end of the day, it's an inward job. You have to go,
there you go.
In. You know, you can't rely on even God. It's our free will. We use the you know, the divine love light energy for good or for bad in this world, but it's our choice to do so.
I love the way you just put that, because besides it being the Odyssey being a great adventure story, it's a kaleidoscopic story of Cyclops, the Sirens, Scylla and Charybdis, all these monsters. The middle of the book is the one we remember from childhood and maybe from our university years. And is what Nolan actually emphasizes in his new movie, the big blockbuster of the year. And what that represents is really humanity saying, all right, how much am I responsible for? Am I really me through dint of sheer will? Because I'm so strong, because I'm a clever woman or a clever man, a strong strategist, or are the gods there when I need them? The Odyssey is the first book that I think begins to sort out the difference between divine will and human will.
Yes.
We are still wrestling with this, aren't we?
Yes, it's the ultimate wrestle, the ultimate battle within.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think that's one reason why the entire world right now is resonating, vibing to Christopher Nolan's Odyssey.
Yeah.
We don't quite know why. We remember the word, the story vaguely from when we were young, maybe in a college course, maybe from our travels, but also in another way that I think your viewers might be interested in. The Odyssey itself, the template of someone who was lost and has to go into the dark night of the soul, the labyrinth in my mentor, Joe Campbell's idea of the hero's journey, and then brings a gift, finds a gift, the gold, the wisdom, the treasure that the dragon is hoarding, and then bring that gift back, is recognizable all around the world.
Yes.
Do you know the Odyssey inspired the Wizard of Oz, Citizen Kane, Jack Kerouac's On the Road, Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey, the most famous Western of all time, The Searchers. Apparently, also inspired Sir Conan Doyle with the Sherlock Holmes stories. Why? It's the idea of the quest. There is a secret. There is some wisdom out there that I don't have, or I had and I lost it.
Yeah.
Maybe I even betrayed myself. Mm-hmm. How do I get that wisdom back?
Yes.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And in the, I was looking at this, and you know, like in the last part, the slaughter of the suitors at the end of the Odyssey, you know, what we've been talking about, the final purging, it's like all of the monsters and all of the final battle, it's like the final purging of our inner enemies, and that leads to which are our own demons, our own ego, our own darkness, the darkness within us. That's the final purging before the light of transformation comes in. And you know, we have that enlightenment, or we and oneness with divine source.
Oh, beautiful. There's such a beautiful summary for the end of my book, because scholars, ordinary readers, viewers, people who like sculpture, the mosaics, these images have been with us since the Greeks, but also through the entire Middle Ages. We go back to these same sources. Odysseus going back and waiting for his dog, who's been waiting for him for 20 years. His dog, this is one of the great images of devotion of all time. Going back to your family, where your son and your wife are waiting for you. But also the troublesome one, as you just beautifully described, is what happens when he goes home and Odysseus finds that there are 108 suitors. This is not an accidental number. This is a magical number in Eastern mythology, Eastern Oriental. It's 108 steps to get into any Buddhist or Hindu temple. 108 gods in Valhalla. 108 tends to be the symbol that describes suddenly the world is turning around 108 degrees, and now we're going in a new direction. What does that mean figuratively? That's why I had to write the book, because there are so many baffling numbers and names and places, but there was no accidental number in the Odyssey, no accidental names or incidences, because the world has to be reborn again. When Odysseus comes home, he doesn't even recognize Ithaca. This is a really beautiful, it's kind of an early depth psychology. This is pure Carl Jung, right? You don't, when we go a long way away, we haven't been home for a while, our friends don't recognize us anymore. And often we don't recognize our own home. And then sometimes we go back, and we try to relive our youth. We try to relive the way that we grew up. And we find out maybe there's even evil there. Maybe something terrible has happened at home. This is the experience of immigrants all around the world. Exiles. People who travel for years and years. And so what's called upon here is not just destruction, but I like to call it the restoration. He had a powerful home, like all of us do. I grew up in Detroit, in the middle of America, the birth of Motown, the birth of the Cars, rhythm and blues. But it's very, very different now. How do I restore that? How do you, if you go and live in India for 10 years and come home to England, it's going to be different. So what happens is he goes back, Odysseus, and he teams together with his son, with Mentor, the great Mentor character, and there's six of them. They do battle, and they have to deal with what Nolan calls in his movie, excuse me, Zeus's Law. And what that refers to is hospitality. And we have an echo of this in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, in sacred literature all around the world. Be alert when you wake up every day. Be aware when you travel. Be aware when someone knocks on your door and says, I'm in trouble. It's a mythological moment. It's a threshold moment. And the old saying was, be kind to the first person you meet every morning, because he or she could be a god or an angel in disguise. And if that code, that means the ancient Greeks said, you have to be kind. You take someone in who knocks on your door, feed them, bathe them, anoint them with oils. Why? Because divinity is knocking on your door. Be kind to them. If that code is violated, the world ends. I think this is the way that the whole Greek empire, what we call the miracle of Greece, was born. Because if you left home, you had to be able to trust the people in the next valley, the next mountain, the next island, if you're going through the Greek islands. That is how finally, after centuries and centuries, Greece amalgamated. But the suitors, 108 of them, who desperately want to marry Penelope when Odysseus is away, have violated that cause, that code. In ancient times, they had to pay a price. Now, you can argue, and scholars have, was that too destructive? In the book, in the poem, and somewhat in Christopher Nolan's new movie, Odysseus has to deal with this. Why? For catharsis. I think this moment is what gave Aristotle his idea of catharsis, which is it's the seed, it's the core of drama. Why is this important? This is not just academic. If you go to a great exhibit at the Tate Gallery, or if you go to an opera in the heart of London, if you go to Florence or Paris and you have a great encounter with theater, with art, with painting, with sculpture, and you begin to weep, you feel your heart pounding, you feel that frisson, that shiver up your back. The ancient Greeks called this catharsis, an outpouring of emotion, which does what? It cleanses you. Yeah. It purifies you. To do what? To start your life all over again.
Yes. It makes your soul soar. Your heart.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
You know, it's the moments, you know, that make life beautiful. Yeah.
I love what you say there, because the soul can get mired down with depression, with anxiety, with fear. Mm. And I love that phrase. It helps your soul soar. That is what happens at the end of the Odyssey. The world needs to be reborn. Odysseus needs to be reborn. So that, I hope you remember this at the end of my book, The Wisdom of the Odyssey, something glorious, glorious happens. I think it's one of the first and still one of the most romantic moments in all of Western art and literature. Briefly, real briefly.
Yes.
The two of them, the husband and wife, Odysseus and Penelope, they have not seen each other for 20 years. This is a long time for lovers, for spouses to be away from each other. And because in the ancient world, there were lots of many, many imposters. Oh, I'm your husband. You just don't recognize me because I'm older, or whatever it might be. So they test back and forth, just the way that lovers do now. Are you really committed to me? Are you really here for the long run? Lovers do this even to this day. They finally recognize each other. It's a beautiful romantic moment. And then, as the translators say in different ways, which Homer is saying, and then they went to bed together and they shared their joy. This is a beautiful element in the poem. It's not quite there in Nolan's movie. There's a lot of yearning and longing, but I don't see the joy in there. That's missing. That's so important to me, but also for spiritual reality. With a spiritual epiphany, there is a burst of joy. So here, now we come to the pinnacle. This is what I write about in the ending to my book. The queen, Penelope, turns to her long-lost husband, just like in many movies, right? Today, or pop songs, it's pure Taylor Swift or Ella Fitzgerald. She turns to him and says, come tell me of thine ordeals. My heart can take it. Oh my gosh, that is so powerful to me. She said, excuse me, sweetheart, I know you've been through a lot. You were at war for 10 years. It's taken you 10 years to come home. Tell me whatever happened. Tell me. I am strong enough. This is one of the greatest statements by a female figure in world literature. Yes. She is saying, I am tough too, Odysseus.
I had to endure you, you know, you gone. I was alone, you know, my enduring was like,
Well, that's what this is building up to. So, of course, the man, Odysseus, he's more than happy to tell about his ordeals, his struggles, his beautiful, powerful, mythological victories. But then he does something, frankly, that a lot of men have forgotten to do over the last couple thousand years. He turns to her And now we're in the middle of the night. And he says, sweetheart, how did you endure while I was away? You had to raise our son Telemachus all alone. What was that like? You had to fend off these monstrous young men who really wanted to murder you, to take the palace, to take ownership of all of our land. How did you do that? And so then Penelope, in turn, tells her story. And as the poet Homer says, they spoke until dawn. They helped raise the sun. Good grief. Wow. It is so beautiful. It's romantic. It gives you a formula about equality.
Yes.
Between men and women who don't just talk. They listen to each other. This gives us a formula, I think, for the next couple millennia.
Yeah,
this is the ideal marriage in the sense we are all going through. And I don't mean to be a smart aleck with this.
Yes.
Everybody goes through hell. Every marriage goes through hell. People leave. People check out, as we say here in America. They're not quite present. This is a story about the map of the soul.
Wow.
The soul that has gone missing. And it helps if you know how to read this in depth. That's why I call this the wisdom. My book is about the wisdom of the Odyssey. Read it closely and you will find a way to heal yourself, because we have all, in some way or another, we've all gotten lost. And sometimes we this, I worked with Robert Johnson, who is a great psychotherapist, whose mentor was Carl Jung. Now, this is kind of the 6 degrees of separation business, right?
Yeah.
And Robert once told me in a lecture we had at UCLA in Los Angeles, and he said, we all change and we forget to tell each other.
That's
the Odyssey is about profound changes, but then you come back together and you talk, but then you listen. You listen to each other. So, and there's a beautiful formula there for spiritual healing, don't you think?
Definitely. And that's what it is, you know, this book, that the underlining of it, you know, is the quest of oneself, but the quest of true love. It's got everything in it. That's why it's a wonderful blockbuster. You know, it's got it's got the war, it's got the suffering, it's got the love, it's got the finding yourself, it's got the divine part, it's got the spiritual part. So, and your book is pointing all of that out, you know, in that.
Thank you. Excuse me. Often what happens when you hand in a book after years and years, because I've been living with this material since I was a boy.
Yeah.
And teaching in Greece itself, not just in an academic setting, but in Greece.
Wow.
I write this, and then as often happens, within hours or sometimes within days, you find something about your topic, and you call your publisher and say, stop the presses. I just found something. Can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
And of course, they say, no, we're already, the book is off to Hong Kong. We're being printed now. So what I found in this case was Nobel lecture by Bob Dylan in 2016, after he surprised the world by being given the Nobel Prize for Literature. A rock star got the Nobel Prize. And it took him a year to actually write the speech. But when he finally did, right smack dab in the middle of his Nobel Prize speech, he says, Odysseus was a traveling man. Which could be a line in one of his songs, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes kind of casual and he says, and he went through a lot of struggles.
Yeah.
He went through a lot of ordeals. Yeah. He lost himself, but he never gave up.
Yes.
And then the last line is this. He says, a lot of this has happened to you.
That's right.
Oh, boy. But, that slays me.
That's it. And you just said it, because we all go through the dark night of the soul. We all go in to face our shadow. And things will always come. But, you know, we never give up. We never give in. And when we get knocked down, we rise up again and we persevere until we reach and we make our dream come true. You know, it's the perseverance. Beautiful. It's the perseverance and the never giving up, you know.
In a word, it is the message of the Odyssey is endure.
Endure, yes.
I added that in the very last, what they call pass of the book. When I'm editing going back and forth with my copy editor, I suddenly realized that this is the great book of endurance of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, the man has, he's fighting monsters, cannibals, seductresses. People are enchanting him again and again. That's why every temptation in the world is in this book.
Yes.
And so in the end, the message is do not let go. Arguably, there is a scene about two-thirds of the way through the book in which he's about to be shipwrecked one more time, like all of us. We get shipwrecked, right?
Yes.
And then the question is, can you hold on to the boat? Can you hold on to the raft? In other words, can you believe in your lover? Can you believe in your boss? Can you believe in your purpose in life?
Yes.
Or are you going to give up? Odysseus almost lets go of the raft near the end of the book. I am arguing in the book, the reason he holds on is the reason most of us do if we don't give up, and that is love. He remembers, I think he hears Penelope's voice. He has a brief image of his son. Remember who he left as an infant. There's no internet. He doesn't really know if his own boy is alive. And he longs for the island, for Ithaca itself. And so he doesn't give up. The way I translate this in my book as a life lesson by saying,
yeah,
let love pull you home again.
UK House Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And that can be self-love, to love thyself, which is so important. Because that's what the demons are, you know, the ultimate, the battle between, you know, our ego and our true self. But, it's the temptations of the world and going within and knowing thyself, loving thyself. Because if we don't love ourselves and accept ourselves from all our misgivings, how can we truly love another?
Oh, that's wonderful. Again, in your own tradition, J.R.R. Tolkien has this wonderful essay. Sorry about this.
Yes.
Tolkien has this wonderful essay on fairy tales, is the name of it. And in there, he describes a place called the Perilous Realm, which, of course, is in The Lord of the Rings. It's in The Hobbit, but also refers wider to all of world folklore in a mysterious way that is in Homer's Odyssey. And that's it. The book begins basically in reality. We know there was a place called Troy. There were probably 8 or 9 wars there. And then at the end of the book, he goes back to a place that we recognize as Ithaca. But in the middle of the book, it's all fantasy. It's all folklore imagination, fairy tales. How and why? Tolkien writes, as a way to understand that, that is where the healing takes place. The healing of the deep soul, the healing of the spiritual wound does not take place in real time. It does not take place in ordinary time. It's what they used sometimes would call the green world, like the green man in the sculptures and all your great Greek British churches. The green man represents healing. And this is where Odysseus has to go because his wounds are so deep. He is so scarred by war. And so I love your interpretation of this. The Cyclops, the cannibals, the Laestrygonians, the Sirens, Scylla, and Calypso, and Circe. These are all projections of his own inner reality.
His own demons within.
But also his own projections of different temptations, the temptation for desire with Circe and Calypso. And he has to learn how to begin to resist temptation if he's ever going to get home again. That sounds familiar for all of us, right?
That's like being on the hero's journey, the spiritual path, the journey, you know, it's just self-discipline to find that, you know, to
right.
the way of the pure. And
the way that I like that, again, I love, because you're over there in the UK, my mind keeps going back to Greece, to Scotland, Ireland, England. Our word glamour, we have a magazine called Glamour. It's at the heart of the movie industry, the fashion industry, but also advertising is all based on glamour. You know, it's an old Scottish word that means spell.
Wow.
It means to enchant you.
I didn't know that.
So I'm going to spin your head around and say, if you buy this refrigerator with this beautiful blonde woman, you will get the woman along with the refrigerator. If you buy this car, if you buy this house, or if you go to Spain during the rainy season in England, it's glamour.
Yeah.
The Odyssey is also about enchantment and spells. And this is the mature versus the immature way. You cannot become a self-realized human being until you learn how to resist glamour. Glamour takes us away from our spiritual path.
That's right.
So we have to learn to disenchant. And then this is the one that most people then are missing, because if you stick with the disenchantment, you become cynical. You become sarcastic, snarky, all those new words, right, to describe this. And so the third stage of this, after you say, okay, I'm not going to succumb to glamour and the trendiness of the world anymore. I'm going to rediscover my original spiritual path. That's my offering to your listeners.
Wow. Well, absolutely amazing. Honestly, Phil, you know, and we can get the book on everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. The book is available. I encourage people to go to your local independent bookstore. Try to pick it up there. It's all over Europe now. Yep. It's here. I'm happy and humbled to say my book, The Wisdom of the Odyssey, just hit number one on the Los Angeles Times booksellers list.
Wow, fantastic.
Because I was just down there in Hollywood. There are a lot of people who came to my book events in Hollywood wanting to really to know more about the movie. They were stunned by the spectacle. But then so many people want to know, is there something else? Is there something more? Which is where the wisdom is. And so many people then went out to buy the book after they saw the movie. Because here in America, there are screenings all night long. 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. screenings of The Odyssey. And then people go home, they talk about it, and then they look to buy my book. So try to read my book to gain more understanding about the movie, and then go and find a translation that sings to you. And I mean sing, not just as cool. For me, E.V. Rue, who is in London, he was the one who came up with the whole legacy of the Penguin Classics. It's R-I-E-U, 1946. He translated the Odyssey into prose. It's the most accessible prose version. And he wrote it while the Germans were bombing London. He wrote this because he thought that civilization was ending and he wanted to help preserve the best of civilization. In Christopher Nolan's new movie, he uses this phrase, the end of civilization, three times. This is a book, The Odyssey, and a movie now that helps us get through hell and see the light, the epiphany that's waiting on the other side. And for those of you who actually want to go to Greece, to some of these places, I lead tours every year to Greece in the footsteps of Homer. This year in September, in the footsteps of Odysseus and Penelope, we go to the sites. We go to the sites and we talk and we talk. We read from the book and I ask people, what do you feel right now? Not just what do you think? What do you feel right now being here on Ithaca? And I'm going to reprise my tour next May, May 2027, because it's the combination.
Yeah,
the combination of reading and travel.
And the email? For people to
vote? My email is soulcous, S-O-U-L-C-O-U-S at AOL.com. And of course, it's philcousineau.com, my website. You can see all my upcoming lectures there. I'm lecturing in Athens in September again.
Wonderful.
And once again, with all humility, I said, just use this opportunity. It's a great world cultural moment that can bring people together. People all around the world, 202 countries, are looking at this movie right now and going back to read the originals. And what will that do? It will help us feel less alone.
That's right.
And more one with all the world.
That's it. Oh, Phil, what can I say? It was just such a pleasure and an honor to listen to you and your beautiful book, The Wisdom of the Odyssey. And honestly, I can't wait to see the movie and I'm going to read really in depth of this beautiful book. So I just want to say thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Well, thank you for awakening us by making us more aware of our own voices, but also to listen to the voices of others. You're Homeric, in a phrase.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you very much. That's lovely. Oh.